This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And we turn now to a discussion of whether war with Iraq has become inevitable. To get in on the conversation, give us a phone call. Our number is 800-989-TALK, our email address, totn@npr.org. Joining us on the phone from Silver Spring, Maryland, is Elliot Cohen, a professor of strategic studies at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, author of Supreme Command, Soldiers, Statesmen, and Leadership in Wartime. And, Professor, thanks for joining us again.
Good to be with you.
You gave an address to a group of businessmen in Bangkok last week in which you set out three reasons why you think there is going to be a war with Iraq. Can you tell us what they are?
Well, I think the most important reason is that the president made up his mind. And this is, you know, really just, I think, a reading of the character of this president, that he came to the conclusion at some point that this had to be resolved. It was a problem that he had inherited, of course, and for a variety of reasons, I think he has determined that he's going to resolve it. I think the second reason why it's very likely is because I don't think that Saddam Hussein is likely to do any of the things that might avoid it. That is to say, really come clean on the weapons of mass destruction, or step down, or be overthrown. I mean, it's. There's, I suppose, a faint possibility that he might actually choose to leave. It's a real possibility, but I think it's actually a pretty small one. And then the third reason is that at this point, the United States really is committed in a variety of ways. You know, the president's prestige is committed, the country's prestige is committed, the American military has been mobilized, and you know, one way to think about this is the American military is like this giant medieval crossbow that you have to winch up, and then you have a tremendous amount of potential energy, but you can't just put it on the shelf for 9 months. It's just materially, and I would argue also psychologically, impossible. So, you know, you could stand it all down if the crisis were resolved, but you couldn't say, well, we're just going to wait until this time next year and see if it still makes sense. I just don't think that's possible.
You said in your address in Bangkok, it is going to be an extraordinarily difficult decision to stand that force down. What would be the effects if the president were to make such a decision?
Well, I think first and foremost, it would be if he was doing that without either Saddam Hussein and the coterie immediately around him being out of power, leaving, it would be a tremendous, tremendous blow to American prestige. You know, the fact that you have the Saudis and other people in the region running around floating this idea of Saddam leaving voluntarily tells you they all think it's inevitable. And in fact, in the region, it's quite clear that people assume that this is going to happen. And given everything that has been said thus far, given everything that has been done thus far, if we simply back off and say, well, we're going to wait another year and stand the forces down, I think it would be a tremendous blow to us psychologically. I also think it would be very hard to get the troops spun up again to do this sort of thing. You know, one does have to think about that. You've got a lot of young men and women who have been training to do this, have been preparing to do this. If, you know, you just say, well, we weren't really serious, we're going to think about this next year, very, very hard to get them spun up again in the way that they have to be to actually conduct military operations. Now, as I said, it is a different thing if the Iraqis completely come clean, which I would be astonished if they did, or Saddam steps down. That's a very different matter. But if we simply back off, I think it would be a tremendous blow to the morale of the American military. That's not why it's going to happen, but that is a fact, I think.
What about the international pressure that seems to be, at this point at least, very reluctant, if not actually resistant, to the idea of this conflict?
Well, all along, it seems to me the administration knew that they were pressing ahead with a policy that was not popular, and was not particularly popular in some quarters in the Arab world and in Europe, and it's also pretty clear to me that the president was pretty much determined to do it nonetheless. And I think I suspect that the administration feels that there's kind of a core group that they have to have in their corner, the British government, the Kuwaitis, obviously. I'm sure they would very much like to have the Turks with them. You know, we're getting quiet cooperation from other countries, which are not going to be very visible or vocal about it, but, you know, you couldn't have had the military buildup that we've had thus far if other countries weren't quietly cooperating. And I suspect that what they think is that, you know, if you go ahead and do this and you're successful, you know, then at the end of the day, international opposition won't matter a whole lot. If it turns out to be a terrible mess, you know, in some ways that's going to be the least of your worries, given the other things that could be going wrong. But since I tend to believe that they're pretty optimistic, at least about the military side of this, about the overthrow of the regime itself, I suspect that they think that, you know, if you're successful, people will forget about their opposition to doing it in the first place. Particularly if, as you know, I would expect would happen, you uncover plenty of evidence that, in fact, Saddam has been manufacturing and hiding weapons of mass destruction for some time.
We have a phone call from Terry, who's on the line with us from Portland, Oregon.
Oh, thank you.
Sure.
Hi, important topic. I just want to say that I'm one of 20,000 people who gathered in Portland to protest this war, and there were 400,000 in Washington, D.C., and 40,000 in San Francisco. And war is not inevitable because beyond what the president's desire is, what is more important is what the American people want, because it's still our country. It's not the president's country. It's not the military's country. And even if the morale of the military will be hurt, so what? The American people do not want this war. We are not comfortable about it at all, and so it is not inevitable. If they want to go against our wishes and desires, they're just violating democracy, because we do not want this war.
Elliot Cohen, thanks very much for the phone call, Terry. Whether you agree with her numbers or disagree, clearly there's a strong element within the country that supports her position, and many others who feel that if the president's going to make his case, he has not made it yet.
Yeah, well, the numbers are way off, but look, more importantly, the fact of the matter is Congress voted overwhelmingly to support the president's policy, and Congress does consist of the representatives of the American people. Certainly, if you look at the opinion polling, they show that the administration does have quite considerable support for the policy it's pursuing. I think it is fair to say that the administration could and should be more energetic in explaining, excuse me, what is at stake and why they're doing what they're doing. And that's I don't think that's a difficult case to make. I mean, the truth of the matter is this is an extraordinarily dangerous regime which has done all kinds of dangerous things. You know, the administration should be doing a much better job of reminding people that the UN Resolution 1441 makes it clear that the Iraqis are and remain in breach of all the resolutions requiring their disarmament, that there's been a consistent policy of dissembling and hiding and concealing and trying to thwart UN inspections, and that clearly has not changed. So I agree. They should be making a much better case. I disagree very strongly that this is a policy that is opposed by the majority of the American people. There's no evidence for that.
And finally, this idea, I know you gave three reasons, but many people would be uncomfortable with the idea that, gee, the United States can't back down because it would lose prestige. I mean, what's prestige against the lives that might be lost in such an operation, the chaos that might be spread?
Well, prestige is something that's very important because it's American reputation and American the belief that the United States can and will act to prevent disastrous things, or, you know, against people who really are extraordinarily ambitious and willing to do truly awful things, that keeps the peace. I mean, this is not a question of you know, popularity ratings or something like that. A political philosopher, Thomas Hobbes, once said, "The reputation of power is power." And, you know, one of the things I think that's difficult for some people to accept, but is nonetheless true, is, you know, there are a lot of downsides to American power, but there are a lot of positive things about it as well. And the world would be an infinitely more dangerous and scary place if America's prestige and American reputation was not very, very high. I mean, arguably, that is what has kept Saddam in his box to this point. It hasn't been the fact of UN resolutions. It's been the fact of American power and fear of American power, and You know, that is something that is worth preserving.
Elliot Cohen, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
Elliot Cohen, professor of strategic studies at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, author of Supreme Command, Soldiers, Statesmen, and Leadership in Wartime, and he was speaking with us from his home in Silver Spring, Maryland. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.